Part 4. Ethical Relations. Chapter 1. A Consideration of the Press and Other Mediums of Communication in Their Relation to the Public Relations Council. When the question of preparing and publishing this volume was first considered, the publishers wrote letters to several hundred prominent men asking their opinions, individually, as to the probable public interest in a work dealing with public relations. Newspaper editors and publishers, heads of large industries and public service corporations, philanthropists, university presidents, and heads of schools of journalism, as well as other prominent men, made up the number. Their replies are exceedingly interesting in as much as they show, almost uniformly, the increasing emphasis placed upon public relations by leaders in every important phase of American life. These replies show also a growing understanding of the need for specialized service in this field of specialized problems. Particularly interesting were the comments of newspaper publishers and editors in response to Mr. Liverwright's inquiry. For nothing could better indicate the light in which the Public Relations Council is held by those very individuals who are supposed popularly to disparage his value in the social and economic scheme of things. What are the relations of the Public Relations Council to the various mediums he can employ to carry his message to that public? There is, of course, first and perhaps most important, the press. There is the moving picture, the lecture platform, there is advertising, there is the direct by mail effort, there is the stage, drama and music, there is word of mouth, there is the pulpit, the schoolroom, the legislative chamber. To all of these, the Public Relations Council has distinct relationship. The journalist of today, while still watching the machinations of the so-called press agent with one half-amused eye, appreciates the value of the service the Public Relations Council is able to give him. To the newspaper, the Public Relations Council serves as a purveyor of news. As disseminator of news, the newspaper holds an important position in American life. This has not always been the case. For the emphasis upon the news side is a development of recent years. Originally, the name newspaper was scarcely an accurate or appropriate designation for the units of the American press. So-called newspapers were, in fact, vehicles for the expression of opinion of their editors. They contained little or no news, as that word is understood today, largely because difficulties of communication made it impossible to obtain any but the most local items of interest. The public was accustomed to look to its press for the opinion of its favorite editor upon subjects of current interest rather than for the recital of mere facts. Today, on the other hand, the expression of editorial opinion is only secondarily the function of a newspaper, and thousands of persons read newspapers with whose editorial policy they do not in the slightest agree. Such a situation would have been nearly impossible in the days of Horace Greeley. The need which the American press is today engaged in satisfying is the need for news. Quote, "A paper," says Mr. Given, "may succeed without printing editorials worth reading and without having any aim other than the making of money, but it cannot possibly thrive unless it gets the news and prints it in a pleasing and attractive form." End quote. Writing from a long experience with the profession of journalism, Will Irwin reaches the conclusion that, quote, "News is the main thing, the vital consideration of the American newspaper. It is both an intellectual craving and a commercial need to the modern world. In popular psychology, it has come to be a crying primal want of the mind, like hunger of the body. Tramp windjammers, taking on the pilot after a long cruise, ask for the papers before they ask, as formerly, for fresh fruit and vegetables. Whenever, in our later Western advance, we Americans set up a new mining camp, an editor, his type slewing on burrow back, comes in with the missionaries, evangel himself of civilization." Most dramatically, the San Francisco disaster illuminated this point. On the morning of April 20th, 1906, the city's population huddled in parks and squares. Their houses gone, death, a famine, a thirst, a rumor, and a possibility. The editors of the three morning newspapers, expressing the true soldier spirit which inspires this most devoted profession, had moved their staffs to the suburb of Oakland, and there, on the presses of the Tribune, they had issued a combined Call Chronicle Examiner. When, at dawn, the paper was printed, an editor and a reporter loaded the edition into an automobile and drove it through the parks of the disordered city, giving copies away. They were fairly mobbed. They had to drive at top speed, casting out the sheets as they went, to make any progress at all. No bread wagon, no supply of blankets, caused half so much stir as did the arrival of the news. Quote, "We need it. We crave it. This nerve of the modern world transmit thought and impulse from the brain of humanity to its muscles. The complex organism of modern society could no more move without it than a man could move without filaments and ganglia. On the commercial and practical side, the man of even small affairs must read news in the newspapers every day to keep informed on the 1,001 activities in the social structure which affect his business. On the intellectual and spiritual side, it is, say for the church alone, our principal outlook on the higher intelligence. The thought of leisure, university, study, and pulpit comes to the common man first, and usually last, in the form of news. The tedious business of teaching reading in public schools has become chiefly a training to consume newspapers. We must go far up in the scale of culture before we find an intellectual equipment more a debtor to the formal education of school and college than to the haphazard education of news." End quote. The extent to which the editorial aspect of the newspaper has given way to an increased importance of the news columns is vividly illustrated in the anecdote about the Philadelphia North American, which Mr. Irwin relates. Quote, "The North American," says Mr. Irwin, "had declared for local option. A committee of brewers waited on the editor. They represented one of the biggest groups in their business. This is an ultimatum," they said. "You must change your policy or lose our advertising. We'll be easy on you. We don't ask you to alter your editorial policy, but you must stop printing news of local option victories." So the deepest and shrewdest enemies of the body politic give practical testimony to the power of the presses in its modern form. End quote. In the case of the brewers of Philadelphia, it is my own opinion that if they had been well advised, instead of attempting to interfere with the policy of the North American, they would have made it a point to bring to the attention of the North American every instance of the defeat of local option. The newspaper would undoubtedly have published both sides of the story, as far as both sides consisted of news. It is because he acts as the purveyor of truthful, accurate, and verifiable news to the press that the conscientious and successful Council on Public Relations is looked upon with favor by the journalist. And in the Code of Ethics recently adopted in Washington by a National Editors Conference, his function is given acknowledgement. Just as in the case of the other mediums for the dissemination of information, mediums which range from the lecture platform to the radio, the press, too, looks to the Public Relations Council for information about the cause he represents. Since news is the newspaper's backbone, it is obvious that an understanding of what news actually is must be an integral part of the equipment of the Public Relations Council. For the Public Relations Council must not only supply news, he must create news. This function as the creator of news is even more important than his others. It has always been interesting to me that a concise, comprehensive definition of news has never been written. What news is, every newspaper man instinctively knows, particularly as it concerns the needs of his own paper. But it is almost as difficult to define news as it is to describe a circular staircase without making corkscrew gestures with one's hands, or as to define some of the abstruse concepts of the metaphysician, like space or time or reality. What is news for one newspaper may have no interest whatever, or very little interest, for another newspaper. There are almost as many definitions of news as there are journalists who take the trouble to define it. Certain of the characteristics of news, of course, can be readily seized upon, and definitions of news generally consist of particular emphasis upon one or another of these characteristics. Mr. Given remarks that, quote, "news was once defined as fresh information of something that has lately taken place." The author of this definition puts the chief emphasis upon the elements of timeliness. Undoubtedly, in most news, that element must be present. It would not be true, however, to say that it must always be present, nor would it be true to say everything which is timely is news. Obviously, the well-nigh infinite number of occurrences which take place in daily life throughout the world are timely enough, so far as each of them in its respective environment is concerned, but few of them ever become news. Mr. Irwin defines as a, quote, "departure from the established order," end quote. Thus, according to Mr. Irwin, a criminal act is news because it is a departure from the established order, and at the same time, an exceptional display of fidelity, courage, or honesty is also news for the same reason. Quote, with our education and established order, we get the knowledge, he says, that mankind in bulk obeys its ideals of that order only imperfectly. When something brings to our attention an exceptional adhesion to religion, virtue, and truth, that becomes in itself a departure from regularity, and therefore news. The knowledge that most servants do their work conscientiously and many stay long in the same employ is not news. But when a committee of housewives presents a medal to a servant who has worked faithfully in one employ for 50 years, that becomes news, because it calls our attention to a case of exceptional fidelity to the ideals of established order. The fact that mankind will consume an undue amount of news about crime and disorder is only a proof that the average human being is optimistic, that he believes the world to be true, sound, and working upward. Crimes and scandals interest him most because they most disturb his picture of the established order. Quote, that, then, is the basis of news. The mysterious news sense, which is necessary to all good reporters, rests on no other foundation than acquired or instinctive perception of this principle. Together, with a feeling for what the greatest number of people will regard as a departure from the established order, in Jesse Lynch Williams' newspaper play, The Stolen Story, occurs this passage. Enter very young reporter. Comes down to city desk with air of excitement. Very young reporter, considerably impressed. Big story. 3 Dagos killed by that boiler explosion. The city editor, reading copy, doesn't look up. 10 lines. Continues reading copy. Very young reporter. Looks surprised and hurt. Crosses over to reporter's table, then turns back to city desk. Casual conversational tone. By the say, funny thing, there was a baby carried within 15 feet of the explosion, but it wasn't upset. The city editor looks up with a professional interest. That's with 12 dead Dagos. Read a half column. Very young reporter looks still more surprised, perplexed. Suddenly the idea dawns upon him. He crosses over to the table, sits down, writes. Quote, both saw news, but the editor went further than the reporter. For cases of Italians killed by a boiler explosion are so common as to approach the commonplace. But a freak of explosive chemistry which annihilates a strong man and does not disturb a baby departs from it widely. End quote. Here again, it is clear that Mr. Irwin has merely emphasized one of the features generally to be found in what we call news, without, however, offering us a complete or exclusive definition of news. Analyzing further within his general rule that news is a departure from the established order, Mr. Irwin goes on to point out certain outstanding factors which enhance or create news value. I cite them here because all of them are unquestionably sound. On the other hand, analysis shows that some of them are directly contradictory to his main principle that only the departure from established order is news. In Mr. Irwin's opinion, the 4 outstanding factors making for the creation or enhancement of news value are the following. 1. Quote, we prefer to read about the things we like. End quote. The result, he says, has been the rule. Power for the men, affection for the women. 2. Quote, our interest in news increases in direct relation to our familiarity with its subject, its setting, and its dramatis persona. End quote. 3. Quote, our interest in news is in direct ratio to its effect on our personal concerns. End quote. 4. Quote, our interest in news increases in direct ratio to the general importance of the persons or activities which it affects. End quote. This is so obvious that it scarcely needs comments. Some notion of the diversity of news arising in a city may be obtained if one studies the points which are watched as news sources, either continuously or closely by metropolitan dailies. Mr. Given lists the places in New York which are watched constantly. Police headquarters, police courts, coroner's office, Supreme Courts, New York County, New York Stock Exchange, City Hall, including the mayor's office, aldermanic chamber, city clerk's office, and office of the president of Manhattan Borough, county clerk's office. Those places, says Mr. Given, which the newspapers watch carefully but not continually are city courts, minor civil cases, court of general sessions, criminal cases, court of special sessions, minor criminal cases, district attorney's office, doors of grand jury rooms when the grand jury is in session for indictments and presentments, federal courts, post office, United States Commissioner's Office and the offices of the United States Secret Service officers, United States Marshal Service, United States District Attorney's Office, Ship News, where incoming and outgoing vessels are reported, Barge Office, where immigrants land, Surrogate's Office, where wills are filed and testimony concerning wills in litigation is heard, Political Headquarters, during campaigns. Finally, the following are visited by the reporters several times or only once a day. Police stations, municipal courts, Board of Health headquarters, Fire Department headquarters, Park Department headquarters, Building Department headquarters, Tombs Prison, County Jail, United States Subtreasury, Office of the Collector of the Port, United States Appraiser's Office, Public Hospitals, Leading Hotels, The Morgue, County Sheriff's Office, City Comptroller's Office, City Treasurer's Office, Offices of the Tax Collector and Tax Assessors. Mr. Givens' example of the broker, John Smith, illustrates aptly the point I am making. Quote, "For 10 years, said Mr. Given, he pursues the even tenor of his way, and except for his customers and his friends, no one gives him a thought. To the newspapers he is as if he were not. But in the 11th year, he suffers heavy losses and, at last, his resources all gone, summons his lawyer and arranges for the making of an assignment. The lawyer posts off to the county clerk's office, and a clerk there makes the necessary entries in the office docket. Here, in step the newspapers. While the clerk is writing Smith's business obituary, a reporter glances over his shoulder, and a few minutes later the newspapers know Smith's troubles and are as well informed concerning his business status as they would be had they kept the reporter at his door every day for over 10 years. Had Smith dropped dead instead of merely making an assignment, his name would have reached the newspapers by way of the coroner's office instead of the county clerk's office. And in fact, while Smith did not know it, the newspapers were prepared and ready for him no matter what he did. They even had representatives waiting for him at the morgue. He was safe only when he walked the straight and narrow path and kept quiet." End quote. An overt act is often necessary before an event can be regarded as news. Commenting on this aspect of the situation, Mr. Lippman discusses this very example of the broker John Smith and his hypothetical bankruptcy. Quote, "That overt act," says Mr. Lippman, "uncovers the news about Smith. Whether the news will be followed up or not is another matter. The point is that before a series of events becomes news, they have usually to make themselves noticeable in some more or less overt act. Generally, too, in a crudely overt act, Smith's friends may have known for years that he was taking risks. Rumors may have even reached a financial editor if Smith's friends were talkative. But apart from the fact that none of this could be published because it would be libel, there is in these rumors nothing definite on which to peg a story. Something definite must occur that has unmistakable form. It may be the act of going into bankruptcy. It may be a fire, a collision, an assault, a riot, an arrest, a denunciation, the introduction of a bill, a speech, a vote, a meeting, the expressed opinion of a well-known citizen, an editorial in a newspaper, a sale, a wage schedule, a price change, the proposal to build a bridge. There must be a manifestation. The course of events must assume a certain definable shape. And until it is in a phase where some aspect is an accomplished fact, news does not separate itself from the ocean of possible truth." End quote. From the point of view of the practical journalist, Mr. Irwin has applied this observation to the making of the news of the day. He says, quote, "I state a platitude when I say that government by the people is the essence of democracy. In theory, the people watch and know when, in the process of social and industrial evolution, they see a new evil becoming important. They found institutions to regulate it or laws to repress it. They cannot watch without light, know without teachers. The newspaper, or some force like it, must daily inform them of things which are shocking and unpleasant in order that democracy, in its slow, wobbling motion upward, may perceive and correct. It is good for us to know that John Smith, made crazy by drink, came home and killed his wife. Startled and shocked, but interested, we may follow the case of John Smith, see that justice in his case is not delayed by his pull with Tammany. Perhaps, when there are enough cases of John Smith, We shall look into the first causes and restrain the groggeries that made him momentarily mad, or the industrial oppression that made him permanently an undernourished, overnerved defective. It is good to know that John Jones, a clerk, forged a check and went to jail. For not only shall we watch justice in his case, but someday we shall watch also the fraudulent racetrack gambling that tempted him to theft. If every day we read of those crimes which grow from the misery of New York's East Side and Chicago's Levy, someday democracy may get at the ultimate causes for overwork, underfeeding, tenement crowding. Quote, no other method is so forcible with the public as driving home the instance which points the moral. General description of bad conditions fails, somehow, to impress the average mind. One might have shouted to Shreveport day after day that low dives make dangerous Negroes, and created no sentiment against saloons. But when a Negro, drunk on bad gin, which he got at such a dive, assaulted and killed Margaret Lear, a schoolgirl, Shreveport voted out the saloon. End quote. For the great mass of activities, there is no machinery of record whatever. How these are to be recorded when they are important is the real problem for the press. In this field, the Public Relations Council plays a considerable part. His is the business of calling to the public attention, through the press and through every other available medium, the point of view, the movement, or the issue which he represents. Mr. Lippman has observed that it is for this reason that what he calls the press agent has become an important factor in modern life. Mr. Lippman's observation on this point deserves comment. He says, quote, this is the underlying reason for the existence of the press agent. This enormous discretion as to what facts and what impressions shall be reported is steadily convincing every organized group of people that whether it wishes to secure publicity or to avoid it, the exercise of discretion cannot be left to the reporter. It is safer to hire a press agent who stands between the group and the newspapers. End quote. The really important function of the Public Relations Council, in relation to the press as well as to his clients, lies even beyond these considerations. He is not merely the purveyor of news, he is more logically the creator of news. An amateur can bring a good story to the average newspaper office and receive consideration, although the amateur is only too likely to miss precisely those features of his story which give it news value, and to overlook precisely that element of the story which will make it interesting to the particular newspaper he is approaching. The New York hotel proprietors were enforcing the prohibition law in relation to their own establishments, but saw that certain restaurants were violating the law with impunity. Realizing the injustice to them of this situation, they built a definite news event by going over the heads of the local law enforcement officers and wired an appeal direct to President Harding, asking for enforcement. This naturally became news of the first order. The opening of a shop by prominent women in which were shown graphic examples of the effect of the tariff on women's wear was an event created to intensify interest in the subject. The launching of battleships with ceremony, the laying of cornerstones, the presentation of memorials, demonstration meetings, parties, and banquets are all events created with a view to their carrying capacity in the various mediums that reach the public. The departments of a modern newspaper will show the great variety of possible approaches on any subject from the standpoint of the press. When this is correlated to the possible approaches on any subject from the standpoint of human psychology, we see the diversification of methods to which the Public Relations Council can have recourse to construct events. In the Metropolitan Press, for instance, there are the news departments, the editorial departments, the letter to the editor department, the women's department, the society department, the current events department, the sport department, the real estate department, the business department, the financial department, the shipping department, the investment department, the educational department, the photographic department, and the other special feature writers and sections, different in different journals. In a valuable study on the, quote, newspaper reading habits of business executives and professional men in New York, end quote, compiled by Professor George Burton Hotchkiss, head of the Department of Advertising and Marketing, and Richard B. Franken, lecturer in advertising at New York University, there are several tables setting forth the features of morning and evening newspapers preferred as a whole by the group to whom the questionnaires were sent, and by various smaller groups within the main group. The Council on Public Relations not only knows what news value is, but knowing it, He is in the position to make news happen. He is a creator of events. An organization held a banquet for a building fund to which the invitations were dispatched on large bricks. The news element in the story was the fact that bricks were dispatched. In this capacity, as purveyor and creator of news for the press as well as for all other mediums of dissemination, it must be clear immediately that the Public Relations Council could not possibly succeed unless he complied with the highest moral and technical requirements of those with whom he is working. Writing on the progression of the Public Relations Council, the author of an article in the New York Times says, quote, "Newspaper editors are the most suspicious and cynical of mortals, but they are as quick to discern the truth as to detect a falsehood," end quote. He goes on to discuss the particular Public Relations Council whom he has in mind and whom he designates by the fictitious name Swift, and remarks, quote, "Irrespective of their position on ethics, Swift and Co. won't deal in spurious goods. They know that one such error would be fatal. The public might forget, but the editor never. Besides, they don't have to," end quote. Truthful and accurate must be the material which the Public Relations Council furnishes to the press and other mediums. In addition, it must have the elements of timeliness and interest which are required of all news. And it must not only have these elements in general, but it must suit the particular needs of each particular newspaper, and even more than that, it must suit the needs of the particular editor in whose department it is hoped that it will be published. Finally, the literary quality of the material must be up to the best standards of the profession of journalism. The writing must be good, in the particular sense in which each newspaper considers a story well written. In brief, the material must come to the editorial desk as carefully prepared and as accurately verified as if the editor himself had assigned a special reporter to secure and write the facts. Only by presenting his news in such form and in such a manner can the Council on Public Relations hope to retain, in the case of the newspaper, the most valuable thing he possesses, the editor's faith and trust. But it must be clearly borne in mind that only in certain cases is the Public Relations Council the intermediary between the news and the press. The event he has counseled upon, the action he has created, finds its own lead of expression in mediums which reach the public. The radio stations offer an avenue of approach to the public. They are controlled by private organizations, large electrical supply companies, department stores, newspapers, telegraph companies, and in some cases by the government. Their programs broadcast information and entertainment to those within their radius. These programs vary in different localities. To the Public Relations Council, there is a wide opportunity to utilize the means of distribution the radio affords. In partisan matters, the controllers of the radio insist upon the presentation of all points of view in order to have the onus of propaganda removed from their shoulders. The Public Relations Council is therefore in a position to suggest to the broadcasting managers a symposium treatment of the subject in which he happens to be interested. Or in the case of information, which has not this partisan character, he is in a position to assure treatment of his subject by embodying his thesis in the form of a speech delivered by some individual of standing and reputation. In the case of events which the Public Relations Council may be instrumental in creating, such as large public meetings, the radio today becomes a natural form of distribution, just as news treatment in newspaper does, and the broadcasting to thousands and thousands of people of the speeches becomes a corollary of the event itself. The broadcasting of Lord Robert Cecil's speech on the League of Nations, delivered at a banquet in New York, is a case in point. Many magazines, for instance, are availing themselves of the radio stations to supply speeches on the particular topics they are most interested in. So the housekeeping magazines supply the radio stations with the information about that phase of women's activities. The fashion magazines do likewise in their fields. And they thereby heighten their own prestige and authority in the minds of their hearers. The use of the wireless telegraph in wartime was an important factor in broadcasting information of war aims and war accomplishments to enemy countries. It was used successfully by both Allied and Central powers. It was utilized even by the Soviet government in the announcements of its communications. This form of propagation differs slightly from the radio, referred to previously, since it depends for its efficacy not upon reaching great numbers of hearers, but upon reaching newspapers and other mediums that give currency to the material broadcasted. The wireless telegraph, of course, was and is a valuable asset to the Public Relations Council. The lecture platform is another well-established means of idea communication. The spoken word has to a certain extent lost its efficacy when the lecture platform alone is considered. The appeal of the lecture platform is limited by the actual number of those who hear the message. It is possible to reach vaster numbers through the printed word, the motion picture, or even the radioed word. Both the weakness of the human voice and the physical characteristics of the place of assemblage bring about this limitation. The lecture platform, however, still retains its importance for the Public Relations Council because it affords him the opportunity to speak before group audiences, which in themselves have a news value, or because it presents the opportunity to stage dramatic events that bring intensification of interest and action on the part of larger audiences than those actually addressed. The lecture field open to the Public Relations Council for the propagation of information or ideas may be divided into several classifications. First, there are the lecture managers and bureaus, which act as agents in booking lecturers to different kinds of groups of audiences throughout the country. The Public Relations Council can, for instance, suggest to his client to secure a prominent person who, because of interest in a cause, will be glad to undertake a lecture tour. Then a bureau may manage the tour. The tours of important proponents on such issues as the League of Nations fall into this class, as well as the tours of prominent authors, arranged by publishers in their behalf. Then there is the lecture tour managed by the client himself, and arranged through the booking of engagement with such local groups as might be interested in assuming sponsorship for what is said. A soap company might engage a lecturer on cleanliness to speak in the schools of leading communities, or a woolen firm arranged for a home economics authority to lecture to women's clubs on dress. These speeches, of course, locally, gain a wider audience than the speaker would who addressed a single meeting, because they give opportunity for treatment in newspapers, advertising, circulating, and other mediums. The lecture field offers another means of communication inasmuch as it gives the Public Relations Council a range of group leaders to whom he can furnish the facts and ideas he is trying to propagate. The lecturers of boards of education in cities throughout the country, the lecturers before schools and other institutions of learning, the lecturers of one sort or another who address varied audiences can be reached directly and can become the carriers of the information the Public Relations Council desires to give forth. The meeting or public demonstration, at which prominent speakers voice their views upon the particular problem or problems at issue, would fall quite naturally under this same classification. Its main purpose, of course, is not so much to reach the audience being addressed as to make a focal point of interest for those thousands and millions who do not attend, but who get the reverberations of the speaker's voice through other mediums than their own auditory sensation. Advertising is a medium open to the Public Relations Council. In the sense in which the word is used here, the term applies to every form of paid space available for the carrying of a message. From the newspaper advertisement to the billboard, its forms are so varied that it has developed its own literature and its own principles in practice. In considering his objective and the mediums through which his potential public can be reached, the Public Relations Council always considers advertising space as among his most important adjuncts. The wise Public Relations Council calls into conference on the particular kinds of advertising to be used in a given problem the advertising agent, who has made this study his life work. The Public Relations Council and the advertising agent then work out the problem in their respective fields. Advertising up to the present time has laid its greatest stress upon the creation of demands and markets for specific goods. It is also applied with effectiveness to the propagation of ideas as well. It is peculiarly effective when used in combination with other methods of appeal. Advertising controls the amount of physical space it occupies before the public eye. Advertising's dimensional qualities give it a facile flexibility that can be extended or limited at will. In a sense, too, this quality gives the special leader the opportunity to select his audience and to give them his message directly. The field of cooperative advertising by combinations of advertisers in the same business or profession, by governments or their subdivisions, for one reason or another, is open to future possibilities. The stage offers an avenue of approach to the public which must be regarded both from the standpoint of the numbers of individuals it reaches, as well as from the circles of influence it creates by word of mouth and otherwise. To the Public Relations Council, therefore, it offers a wide field. Through cooperation with playwrights or managers, ideas can be given currency on the stage. When they can be translated to the action that takes place upon a stage, they are given emphasis by the visual and auditory presentation. The motion picture falls into two fields for the purposes of the Public Relations Council. There is the field of the feature film. Here, any direct utilization of the Public Relations Council's ideas must come indirectly and be taken by the producer of the film from some of the other organs of thought communication. The producer may adopt for the subject of a film some idea which the Public Relations Council has agitated. The film, for instance, dealing with the drug traffic came very definitively as a result of the work carried on to help relieve the drug evil. The second field is one the Public Relations Council can employ more directly. Educational films are made to order today to illustrate specific points for public consumption, from showing how product is made to showing the necessity for subway relief in a big city. These films are usually shown before a special group audience, arranged for by the Public Relations Council or before some other group interested in the idea the particular film stands for. Thus, a chamber of commerce can further a film having to do with the need for better port facilities. One phase of this kind of film is the newsreel, which, controlled by a private organization, films events and occasions which may have been created by the Public Relations Council, but which carries because of its value in the competitive market of events. Word of mouth is an important medium to be considered. Ideas and facts can be given currency by word of mouth. Here, group leaders are strong factors in giving currency to ideas. The Public Relations Council often communicates the ideas he wishes to promulgate to group leaders whose espousal of the idea he wishes to obtain. The direct by mail campaign and the printed word afford the Public Relations Council channels of approach to such individuals as he may desire to reach. Large companies have available for such purposes lists of individuals arranged according to innumerable criteria. There are geographical divisions, professional divisions, business divisions, and divisions of religion. There are classifications by economic position, classifications by all manner of preferences. This classification of his public into the right group for the proper appeals is one of the most important functions of the Public Relations Council, as we have pointed out. The direct-by-mail method of approach offers wide opportunities for capitalizing his training and experience along these lines. Telegraphic and wireless communications would, of course, come under this heading.